Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Property Beat, where real estate is part of your life. The coffee is hot, the conversation lively, and we're talking real estate. I'm your host, Cliff Perotti, along with co-host Jonathan Nicholas. Keeping us on track and out of trouble is our producer for the show, Tom McGowan. And now, on to the Property Beat.
Well, good morning. Thank you for joining us for another yet exciting episode here of the Property Beat. Greetings to all of our listeners. This is Jonathan Nicholas. I'm your solo host today. Something has happened around here for sure. And definitely I'm absent of my best friend and co-host, Cliff Perotti, who's out there on location covering an industry event.
There's something screwy around here.
Well, I'd have to agree with that, definitely. So it's going to be a little different, too, with being solo today, but we have got an exciting guest that is going to be joining us. We'll be talking with our special guest, Dee Sidney Potter, author of the new book, The Flip, the true story of how a new track home investor went from zero to hero and then back to zero again. Now, the book has literally been proclaimed as an exhaustive field manual for those who invest or want to learn from someone who does or knows how to do it, and we're excited to have him as a guest this week. So stay tuned to hear more from Sidney as he gives us his story and how he came to write a book called The Flip, which is very, very timely in today's market. So we'd like to encourage and invite you to become a part of the conversation here at the Property Beat, and you can do that by calling into us. That's area code 347-989-0439. Again, 347-989-0439. And you can also, of course, email us your comments, your questions, an attaboy, or whatever you feel is appropriate at the time. You can email those questions or comments to questions@thepropertybeat.com. Questions, just like it's spelt normally, at thepropertybeat.com. And then stop by and visit our website also while you're there. And connect with us on your favorite social media accounts, Facebook. You can like our site, or you can certainly give us a tweet out there, and we like to stay up with you in any way that you want to communicate with us. So before we get to our guests, we've got a couple of real estate stories out there in the news, and we want to go through those, but we're going to break real quick for a commercial message. So while we do that, just hold on.
Once upon a time, there was an engineer. Choo-choo Charlie was his name, we hear. He had an engine and he sure had fun. He used good and plenty candy to make his train run.
Charlie says, love my good and plenty. Charlie says, really rings the bell. Charlie says, love my good and plenty. Don't know any other candy that I love so well.
Time for the news here at the property. Well, very interesting week this last week in real estate. Of course, we continue to see all kinds of headlines out there in regards to declining prices in those markets that still haven't recovered. There's a few of those markets still around, some increasing prices and some appreciation of those other markets. And then, of course, right behind that, every time we get a little good news, we also see another stream of foreclosures or another segment of the market we weren't expecting. And so it is an up and down roller coaster ride out there. And it's always interesting to find, the bright glimmers of sunshine in our real estate news whenever we can be positive and bring those to you. But I don't know if I'm going to be positive today or not, but certainly there is a lot of news out there. You know what? And one that I wanted to share with you this last week, but just to get a chance to do it because, time is as it is on these types of shows, and we've got to make use of it. But I tell you, there was one that I found very, very interesting, and it's a news story that comes from consumerist.com, and actually this is a contest, if you will, that they put on an annual basis of the worst companies in America. it's an hysterical, I guess, almost like a Final 16, Final Four, Sweet 16 type of thing, as they do in the basketball, and they'll line up all of these companies eight teams, what have you, and then drill it down as those companies duke it out in this virtual, you know, game or tournament, if you will, down to what is the final four and then also to the actual winners, if you can call this being a winner. But you know what? It's very interesting because we see the names of the companies, and if you want to go to the website, it's the Consumerist, or just actually consumerist.com, that's C-O-N-S-U-M-E-R-I-S-T.com. Meet Your Worst Company in America. Very interesting who the winners were. But starting into this tournament, we had Bank of America, Citibank, Sears, Kmart, Walmart, Time Warner Cable, Charter Communications, HP, Dell, Chase, Capital One, Ticketmaster, NBC, Anthem, Blue Cross Blue Shield, Assurant Health, Toyota, GM. And on the other side, opposing parties was Microsoft and Apple and Verizon, AT&T, DirecTV, Comcast, Continental Airlines, United, Delta, U.S. Airways, LifeLock, PayPal, GameStop, Best Buy, Cash for Gold, and AIG. And it was interesting to see how public opinion, you know, of course, can sway these results. And then to see who actually, you know, emerged as some of the worst companies in America. In the final four, if you will, it was Bank of America, Cash for Gold, Ticketmaster, and Comcast Cable. And it's funny, as you're out there and you're talking with friends, different ones, you hear some of these names come up. In just the normal course of conversation, I can't stand Comcast or whatever the case is, you know, in a friendly conversation. But it's very interesting to see who came out as the winner and who were in the final two. And what we saw was that you have Comcast and Bank of America. And Bank of America emerged as the worst company in America. Now, the reason why I'm so interested in this is because of the real estate background that I know of Bank of America, having come through a acquisition of Countrywide some years ago, having just really a debacle on their hands of integrating the technology from Countrywide into their own underwriting technology at Bank of America. Tons of people out there, thousands upon thousands, that had problems with getting loans processed in a timely fashion. Really was a PR black eye for Bank of America, but here it is. Bank of America emerges as the worst company simply because of, number one, that thing that I just discussed, but number two, because of the fact that they swallowed up Merrill Lynch and took advantage of the TARP funds and have really kind of emerged as the favorite child of the administration, so to speak, or of this government, that has really put a lot of collateral behind them. And you know what? The American people just really haven't looked too kindly on that. So there you go. Go to Consumers. Check it out. It happens every year. This was the 2010 finals that they just announced this month. I thought you'd enjoy that. And it's very, very interesting. It really is, I have to say. So anyway, a little word of caution out there as well as you're thinking about moving. As you're thinking about maybe the spring market, getting out there and moving into a new home, getting out there and looking, you know, there's a number of ways that we get out and we look. Of course, as we know, consumers are by a margin of 9 to 1 are going to the internet and looking at properties and doing the research and finding out all kinds of stuff. But, of course, you start that way out there early in the stages, you know, 18 months out as far as that. But when it comes time to start looking at properties, and maybe you're looking through Craigslist or Backpage or Oodle or one of those types of sites and you're finding things, you know, there's a lot of unscrupulous people out there. They're advertising. I just ran across one myself as I was just kind of investigating the market and looking for some values out there. But in the rental market, this is something that happens quite a bit. And I want you to be aware of it as a listener of the show so that, you know, if you've never heard it before, this will be the first time, and maybe we save you for something. If you've heard of this before, then it's a reminder for you to be on the lookout. But certainly there are those people that are advertising homes that they have no right to advertise, whether that is that they clip the photos and the information off of a website such as Realtor.com or a company website, took that information, pasted it into a online ad in Craigslist or Oodle or Backpage or somewhere along those lines, and they're pushing traffic to themselves by way of email, and it could be somebody that's sitting over in a foreign country, West Africa or something. And in the case that I had was actually West Africa this last week, a great builder, new construction, vacant property, not too far from where I'm currently living. And this property is a beautiful property that would be, you know, $1 million property out there in the marketplace, but obviously has either been foreclosed upon or has been languishing on the market with the builder. And they put in an ad that says, you know, owner finance or seller will finance or protracted terms or will rent it out under market, whatever the case is. So they ran an ad as such on this property. And, of course, when I respond to it to find out more information, because, hey, you're always out there looking for a great deal, right? Something that maybe you could turn or flip, and it was certainly looked as if it was a great opportunity for that. And I get an email back, you know, a day later. And you can always tell the tone of the email, the way they're written, it is almost as if a machine is writing the email. But certainly this person said, while I'm in West Africa, I can't send you the keys. There's no one to meet you. And, oh, by the way, if you want to get in, take a look at it. Well, you'll need to send me so much money or send me a deposit or send me an application or send me whatever the case is. There's always that money exchange and information exchange. So beware of the scams that are out there. This is the prime moving season. There's a lot of stuff going on. Even as we think about movers and calling up which movers you want to talk to help move your family, there's a bunch of stuff that's going out there. One company I know has stole a family's money and all their possessions. You know, they take off with the truck that's loaded with all your stuff. They don't come back. You know, you think they're heading to the new place. You get to the new place and you wait and you wait and you wait, and they're off because they've accepted a deposit from you or required a deposit of you, loaded up all your stuff, and they're gone. Another scam artist just bid the phone, over the phone for a low hourly rate and then held the family's belongings hostage until they paid a sum three times the original amount quoted. So beware out there. I want you to think about that before you launch out. There's some things to be aware of, and you know, be careful out there. It's a kind of a funny world. It certainly is not one that, you know, is as innocent as it has been in the past. So CNNMoney.com came out with the list of best shrinking places to live. Now, you might say, Jonathan, what the heck does that mean? Well, the 2010 census revealed that lots of U.S. towns and cities are losing population. A lot of our major metropolitan areas are losing population. Either people are moving out because of jobs moved away, or they're moving out because they're tired of the hustle and bustle. And yet there's a trend also, as you know, of the reurbanization of people moving into the downtown. So what's happening here? There's a list of 10 great places to live that are actually, that they are declining in their population, but they're great places to live. They're not rusting old industrial cities, but they're fine places to live and raise families. And actually, out of the 10, there's 8 that I wanted to talk about. Ocean City, New Jersey is one of those out there, population of about 15,000. They've dropped down about 4%, but a great lifestyle. I know people that live there, enjoy a very, very good lifestyle. Williamsport, Pennsylvania, about 30%, I mean, it was 30,000, I'm sorry, population, and they dropped in population 4.6%. And this is a great, great place. You know, it was known for the manufacture of sewing machines and bicycles and automobile engines. There are still some manufacturing plants there. It's going through a renaissance, and a lot of it's being fueled by natural gas development, believe it or not, just similar to the shale that's located around the DFW area down in Dallas, Fort Worth, Texas. So that's another one. Number two. Number three in this list is St. Petersburg, Florida. Population in 2010 was 244,000. It's dropped by about a percentage. And if you've not been to St. Petersburg, beautiful. You've got your beaches there. You've got the West Coast. You got the sunset in the evenings, a lot of things. And, you know, the population there is stagnated. There's been zero population growth in the 80s. And it's the fourth largest city in Florida. Has a lot of nice cultural attractions to it. Then we have, coming up on our list, Eureka, California, great place up in the northern part of the state. 25,000 population has dropped by about 2%. It's off the California coast between San Francisco, of course, and the Oregon border. And, you know, it was famous years ago in the 19th century for gold mining and shipping, lumbering, and fishing. And all of that has declined, as it were, but the Redwood National Park is the place where people go to see those great trees, the world's tallest trees. And there's some great cultural things going on around there, kind of a renaissance, if you will, is going on. And the average homes are selling for around $200,000, so a great place to be as well. Then we have coming up on the list is Barnstable, Massachusetts. That's not this is a town I was not familiar with. It's out there in the shoulder part of the Cape Cod, and 45,000 population, dropped about 2%. But you can certainly be out there on the shorelines of the Nantucket Sound, and what a great place to be. One of the more famous communities out there that you would probably know is Hyannisport, and where the Kennedy compound is. So the one thing about this area is don't look for cheap housing. You're certainly not going to find that. A small ranch will run $250, but the big homes right along the shore, of course, are $3 million and more. And then our next community is Wheeling, West Virginia. This is a great town. I've been through this town. You can't help but to pass through there when you're going from west to east and or vice versa across I-70. 28,000 population, drop of 9%. But what a great-looking historic town set in a beautiful backdrop of the valley there in West Virginia. Beautiful, beautiful area. Great natural resources. Several colleges in the area. Crime rates are extremely low. Great place to be. And the average 3,000 square foot home there would be about $260,000, so quite a bargain for those looking to get a little bit more square footage and be in a great place. Another West Virginia find showed up on this list, which I thought was interesting. Beautiful old Victorians. Queen Anne's, Parkersburg, West Virginia, 31,000 population. It's a transportation hub on the Ohio River and along the Parkersburg Turnpike. Beautiful, beautiful area. This is like stepping back in time. There's fishing and boating and beautiful properties there. Great family-friendly city. So and our last one on the list is Battle Creek, Michigan. At 52,000 population, they've had a drop of about 1.9%. This is the home of Kellogg's since 1906, where cornflakes and Rice Krispies and Raisin Bran come from. So Kellogg is still the town's biggest employer, but things have slowed down there, and this is another great place. Median pricing home, wow, $78,000. What a difference. What a difference that is. And what you could get for your money there. So anyway, hope you enjoyed listening to that and hearing. And we're going to take a quick break again, and then we're going to be back with our question of the week.
J-E-L-L.
Extra, extra, extra good news. The makers of Jell-O have discovered a way to give you rich, luscious chocolate pudding far more easily and far more economically than ever before. With the new Jell-O chocolate pudding powder, you can make old-fashioned pudding, smooth, creamy, and chocolatey, just like the ones grandmother used to make back in the good old days. Now you can have them again, and this is all you have to do. Just combine the contents of a package of Jell-O chocolate pudding with some milk in the top of your double boiler, letting it cook until it becomes smooth and thick. When the mixture has cooled, serve it in sherbet glasses. You'll have enough for six helpings. And that means six happy people. Jell-O chocolate pudding is so simple, so inexpensive, and so downright delicious that you mustn't delay trying it. Ask your grocer for Jell-O chocolate pudding, and if he hasn't put it in stock yet, be sure he orders it for you. Remember the name, Jell-O chocolate pudding.
Okay, we're back, and I wanted to talk about our question of the week this week. You know, so as you know, we like to challenge our listeners out there with the question each week, and some weeks our listeners are more challenged than other weeks, and, you know, really, I must be mentally challenged to come up with some of these questions. Definitely have to...
No, you're doing it all wrong.
Well, that might be right, Yosemite, but let's talk about the question from last week, and you can decide out there as you're listening to us. On a previous episode, David Rivero shared with us his thoughts on renting versus homeownership. And if you'll remember, David was with us talking about the rise of the renter nation, and this is a trend that we're seeing, you know, that return of that permanent renter class, even greater than what we've had in the past with the decline in homeownership rates. But when he spoke about renting a property, He referred to the monthly rental payment as being similar to another common reoccurring monthly payment system. What was the name of the comparable that he mentioned? And the answer is, drumroll, subscribing. He considered it almost like a subscription service. He said, hey, it's like subscribing to some type of a service. And David spoke of that being a residence. And when you're agreeing to a monthly payment in return for services rendered, you know, you're not having to take care of the maintenance, you're not having to do certain things, that homeowner is providing a service in return for a monthly subscription. I thought that was a brilliant way to look at it. It's true, kind of brings it to mind. And I think that's how a lot of Gen X, Gen Y people are looking at this now as they're considering being a renter instead of investing in property out there or instead of buying a home for homeownership. So that is the answer, subscription-based service. Our winner was Sherry Rinaldi, Cherry Hill, New Jersey. Sherry will receive a Property Beat T-shirt. So now I'm looking over here on the other wall, and I'm looking at the dartboard to see what question was the one that got hit by the dart this week. And the question of this week is, let's see here. Savannah Ross, you remember her from last week, Rich Mom. She was on, and she was telling us her Rags to Riches story, during which she talked about her young son investing in real estate. What was the name or the nickname that had been given to her son once he became a investor?
That's a very interesting question.
You're right, George. It is a good question. That's why it's the question of this week. So if you think you know the answer to this question, just send it to us. I don't know. You can sit it on the back of a large, sizable cashier's check, spelled out C-A-S-H, to us here at the Property Beat. Or if you don't know, go download last week's show to your iPod, listen to it, and cheat. Yeah, that's a simple way to do it. Then email your answer to questions at the Property Beat. Well, we're going to take a real quick break again, and we'll be back with our guest, D. Sidney Potter.
Dream of wheat is so good to eat, yes, we have it every day. We sing this song, it will make us strong, and it takes the job, hooray! It's good for growing babies and grown-ups too, to eat. For all the family's breakfast, you can see cream of wheat.
All right, we're back. So our guest this week is D. Sidney Potter, investor, double MBA, real estate flipper extraordinaire, and professor of flipponomics. All kidding aside, though, really, Sidney has lived the life of a successful entrepreneur, investor, and has also experienced the crash and burn when the market suddenly went sideways. He's written a book about the experience called The Flip, and he's here with us now. Sidney, we're so glad that you could join us this morning. Good morning.
Jonathan Nichols, thank you for your time. Appreciate it. I really do.
Well, we're excited to have you here, and I know you've got a lot to tell us this morning. And as our listeners know, one of the things that we like to do here with all of our guests is ask them to start off by telling us something unusual, something about themselves that's really interesting, something cool. It can be something they've done or some aspiration or dream that you've had in the past or something you're really proud of, anything. It doesn't have to be real estate related, of course. It just needs to be interesting and reveal a little about our guest personality. So, Sidney, reach back and give us your best. What have you got for our listeners this morning?
Oh, gee whiz. Oh, boy. You know, I should have been prepared for that. I'll tell you, can I take a furlough 52 minutes from now and we can answer that to close the show out?
No problem at all. You can tell us. They'll give you time to think. You can scribble down some notes. You can listen. Okay. You know, during one of the commercials breaks or something, and write it down. I'll give you a break. A little bit of a rain check. So,
okay. And I've got a question, Jonathan. I have a question for you. What happened to your absenteeism? Your absentee co-host here, Cliff. Where is he?
Well, Cliff. You know, a fair-weathered friend, Mr. Cliff,
yeah.
He's flown off to the Midwest. He's in Chicago, actually, working on a real estate transaction. So as long as he's working on a real estate transaction, we do have a policy here at the Property Beat. We will give you a pass.
Okay, good. He's got a hall pass.
And if he makes any profit, then he has to share it back with everybody here at the Property Beat. So,
yeah. There should be some shared equity, that's for sure.
We're not into the sweat equity. We only want the shared equity.
Mm-hmm.
So, That's true. Well, you're a self-professed flipologist, and I call you the professor of fliponomics out there, kiddingly, but it's true.
Yeah.
Those are terms that you've kind of coined, and tell us how you got involved in this volatile, what I would consider a volatile niche of real estate.
Sure, sure. And just, listen, class is in session, so sharpen your pencils, put on your thinking caps, and listen. And hopefully the professor will learn something as well. Just wanted to compliment. I know your real estate roots go from the Midwest out here to the West Coast right now, so it's a pleasure really to listen. Now, in all fairness, a little-known author, although he's a New York bestseller, Stefan Spanazio of Sicilian ancestry, so maybe Cliff knows him, gave me the term flipologist. So that wasn't a self-professed term, but I will take credit for fliponomics and flip methodology and some of the tenets of that. I got into the business almost, at least in terms of flipping new track homes, because that's what I did and that's what I do, about a decade ago. Of course, I'm out here in Pasadena, California, and it's about 60 miles west of that, or east of that, rather, is Riverside County, which was just really almost the epicenter in terms of the Southwest, in terms of the country on these high appreciation markets, and it almost got in it by accident. It was, talk about a timing issue, and spotted an opportunity talking about entrepreneurship, and had some capital, and started to buy, and just under 50 homes I bought under a 5-6 year period, actually. So that's all actually where it started there, Jonathan.
And your methodology was really to go into those subdivisions that maybe were, I guess, fresh out of the ground, and go the track subdivisions. Is that what you were doing?
I consider it a more sanitized way of investing, and I certainly am a guy that likes to get his hands dirty. I did a lot of the landscaping on some of the homes I bought. I just don't talk it, but it's more sanitized as opposed to, let's say, REO flipping, real estate owned flipping, resales, which is great, which comprises a large portion of the real estate investment market. But these are what they call sticks up, where you start to see their framing stages. And the primary reason, not because it's a sanitized way of buying and selling real estate at a fairly rapid click, it's because there's very small buy-in. It's leverage. I call leverage the eighth wonder of the world. It's a good use of leverage because it's only your equity that's at risk. It isn't like a leverage situation where Wall Street to Main Street has put us all at risk and diluted the market. But we're talking $500 to $1,500 where you can put a track home under contract, and you wait for its full maturation, anywhere from a year to 18 months. And putting a little bit of skin in the game, only $500 to $1,500, and almost like long-term options, waiting for that to go up in value, is really minimizing the risk, as opposed to the slightly more risky area of real estate investing, which is the resales, which you start a mortgage payment immediately after you close the property. On new track homes, you don't. And, of course, with the issues on warrantability, whether the construction quality of the home, whether or not there's some title issues on resales, I just thought it minimized the living bejesus out of the risk, or took a substantial amount of the risk out of it, Jonathan. And that's why I guess you can say flip methodologies as it relates to track housing was born for me, and that was probably about 10 years ago, actually.
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, you were really out there betting with that down payment to get that builder to build that property, that the appreciation was going to be such that you could turn around and sell that before the property was finished. I think that's what I'm hearing you say.
Yes, yes. And, gosh, I wanted to also add, you know, one of the just a dear friend, in fact, one of my fellow investors, one of my board of director members that I sat on the board with, it made it was kind enough to write something very nice about the book. And Michael Flores, he's the president of the Las Vegas Country Club out there in Las Vegas, said ultimately in the end it became like a musical chairs. You know, before it was like shooting. This is the mix analogy a little bit. Before it was like shooting fish in a bucket. Then it became a musical chair situation, and we all know how that is. As a child, someone gets knocked out and left out, and some of us did unfortunately lose on that.
I can imagine. Now, give our listeners some, I guess, something else catching your background. Now, I had read through some of your bios. Your dad was in real estate, and you were kind of out there specializing, I guess, in the commercial industry as well. What did you do before jumping right into the flipping?
Right. 2000, gee whiz, no, let me try an extra decade, 1992, 93, which is right on the heels of another real estate implosion, ironically, and Jonathan, now that you asked the question, that was from the RTC days, Resolution Trust Corporation.
Right.
Their main headquarters, sub-headquarters out here in Newport Beach in Southern California, also Dallas, Texas, and it started out as a mortgage evaluation consultant with a company called Synergy Consultancy Group, and it was shifting through the embers and the burnt ashes of primarily commercial real estate, but a lot of residential as well. So it was what they call file scrubs, and that's what you do when you go through PSAs, pool servicing agreements, which pool these mortgage-backed securities in different trenches, and you determine due diligence, call periods, interest rates, whether or not they're in line or not, and ultimately it was determining the value of these securities. So this is, geez, that was like 20 years ago. And then eventually sold shopping centers, decently successful, following my father's footsteps. He sold shopping centers and storefront retail out there in South Central Los Angeles. I remember as a kid going to sites. I mean, just a beautiful experience. And as a kid, I wanted to do that. And real estate's always been a passion. It's been in the blood. And it's been just a beautiful type of industry despite the ups and downs. So I'm certainly glad to still be in it.
Right, exactly. Well, you were out there doing it. You were being successful at it. And I understand you're also helping and teaching others to make their fortune in real estate as well. Is that correct?
It is. I mean, I certainly do. You know, it's people have a way of contacting me, and it's been wonderful to talk, to mix the real estate in terms of commercial and residential to folks that want to make advisement decisions with Potter Equities, which is a small little operation I run out here in Pasadena, California. It's been very fruitful and very wonderful. And, you know, if you can be level-headed about it and advise and assist those that are fairly authentic and have a lot of sincerity and hopefully a degree of prudence, they don't get the animal spirits, as Robert Shuler, professor of economics at Yale, which is part of the S&P 500 Case-Shuler Index, but one of the major real estate indices, has termed it. As long as you stay away from that animal spirits and you're able to essentially take out the emotion of some of the real estate investing, it can be a very fruitful situation.
Absolutely. Just like you said, being level-headed about it and being wise as you go in there with your eyes wide open. We're going to take a quick break and hear from our sponsors, Coke, and we'll be right back after this break.
I'd like to buy the world a home and furnish it with love. Grow apple trees and honeybees.
I'd like to remind our listeners that if you have a question that you'd like to ask our guest, Sydney Potter, well, you can simply call us at 347-989-0439. We do have a question that came in by email from a listener, email from Brian Beckham, Santa Barbara, California. He writes, I've invested in rentals over the years, and I am considering a 1031 exchange or rolling some equity from the rentals into foreclosed subdivision opportunities. Now, it's a little different from what we were talking about here with Sydney. These are foreclosed subdivisions. He says he's finding these opportunities out in the Florida market. It's a change of scenery and product for me. little trepidation I hear in that sentence. Any advice that you can provide would be greatly appreciated. So what would you say to Brian Beckham out in Santa Barbara?
Sure. Brian asked a great question. Just to let you know, I was actually – I worked in Florida recently out in the Jacksonville area, which is just west or east of the Panhandle in northern part of Florida. Depends what market in Florida. I would be hesitant, obviously, on the overpriced areas, but they're still slightly overpriced, believe it or not, in Miami, although that's having an incredible resurgence. So it depends upon the location. Tampa is good. On 1031 exchanges, did a lot of those as a commercial broker in the 90s. That's a smart move. That's a deferred taxation. It has its genesis from the Stocker Exchange. That was named after Senator Stocker. I don't know which state he was from. This was in the late 60s, early 70s. So anytime you can have deferred taxation, God willing, when you do have to pay taxes on those, it might be at a slightly lower rate. The wonderful things about 1031 exchanges, and Brian probably knows this, you can take cash from different types of commercial transactions and residential investment transactions, let's say if it's a rental per se, but not from a primary home, including land, and roll that over into a deferred opportunity. I also heard foreclosures and REO. I would be very cautious. Make certain that you've got a clean title on there. We've got the robo signing issue still fresh. One of the reasons why I love Track Housing. And you just want to make sure you have a clean deal, and it depends upon how much rehab. If it's turnkey, that's beautiful on a foreclosure, and there are lots of opportunities out there. If it's not turnkey and if it's just light rehab, which is some drywall, some new light bulbs, light switches, et cetera, maybe some tiling, which is fairly simple and low cost, and a lot of professionals know how to do that, then I think that's doable. But if there's too many unknown factors in here, when you look on a yellow legal piece of paper, pros and cons, and you got too many cons, I'd probably stay away from it. But just on a microscopic 30,000 square foot level, it seems probably attractive, and now is the best time to buy. And the best time, there's this apex between buying opportunities versus low interest rates, and if you have the capital, what I say is buy. Definitely. Hopefully that will lead you away.
Great, great insight. Tell us, going back to your story, 2007 comes about. What happened when this market turned upside down? What happened to you in the middle of all this?
It's more like mission creep. You're out there in the jungle, and it's real estate creep, and you don't really. It's like the tide rising. You don't really immediately notice it unless you doze off and you wake up and it's neck high. The funny thing I like to reference to is that when you start seeing headlines that the real estate bust is coming, it's probably a good idea. It's coming like the Grim Reaper. The Grim Reaper may not be knocking, but you're looking through the people right there, and he's walking down the hallway or up the driveway, and you better be prepared. The things that were happening, Jonathan, for boots on the ground in particular, slower marketing time, so I've got some, the circularity of inventory that I'm selling product that's on the selling block, and it's taking a little bit longer time to sell. The underwriting times were elongated by the lenders. Some of the lenders, First Magnum, for example, out of Tucson, Arizona, Phoenix, Arizona, went out of business. So when you start seeing the companies that start to show down earnings in terms of stock prices and their finance, real estate, mortgage related, that's an issue. Appraisals, I don't want to say my appraisals were rubber stamped per se, but the term times were much longer. Instead of, let's say, a week, it became 2 weeks. So you started seeing this type of contraction, if you will, and that's when I started to see in 2007 when the market started to take a turn at that point.
Right. And you inevitably got stuck with 3, 4, 5 properties out there, and you had to do something about it. So what did you do to turn it all around, get back in control of your life, your business, your relationships out there?
That's, after, I had a $1 to $10 million bankruptcy. That's huge. I mean, that's some huge reconstructive surgery. And just to let your listeners know, I mean, listen, bankruptcy is a wonderful financial management tool. I would recommend it to anyone who needs that surgery. It's not voluntary surgery, okay, but if it's required surgery, elective surgery, I would certainly take it. I mean, keep in mind Donald Trump and Sam Zell, two very prolific real estate investors from Zell Equities have filed bankruptcy in connection with some of the properties. Obviously, there's a huge distinction between guys like myself and them. They're fairly well insulated. So after that, you know that type of implosion, not too easy to get real estate, but it gives you an opportunity to rebuild what you want to redo in terms of going out there. The process that I'm going through right now is, little did I know, but I made a strategic decision almost by happenstance, and that is, instead of filing, let's say, a corporate reorganization Chapter 11, which I certainly could have did under my business, Jonathan, because you asked about life business relationships, I chose personal bankruptcy, and that actually turned out to be just a wonderful situational scenario, because my business profile is absolutely intact. It's actually above average. So what I'm doing right now, at least what I find myself in terms of looking at property and buying property and property that I have under contract, is that the business profile is absolutely wonderful. So that type of reconstruction is not taking a long time to reboot. That's because I kept that protected. I would say anyone in another similar situation, keep in mind the wonderful aspects about LLC. Ask Sam Zell or Donald Trump, because you insulate yourself. Not only big guys like that, but the regular everyday Main Street folks can certainly use it to protect and make a distinction almost between state and church, between business and personal finances. And that actually has been a fruitful type of event. So relationships, you know what, I still have a lot of wonderful broker friends out there. They're a unique type, including some escrow officers, managers. But I have to tell you, you know, when you're not buying and you're not the soup du jour, the kid of the month, you don't get as many Christmas cards. So Jonathan, I started noticing about 2008, I wasn't getting Christmas cards and fruit baskets and chocolates, you know, come Christmas and holidays, and suddenly no one remembered my birthday except my wonderful family, okay? God bless them, my sister and mother. So that's how it is now. And listen, I'm working out there 10 to 12 hours a day and just enjoying it. This is because it's a great time to buy, and you got to be happy to be around, really.
Very, very interesting. It's good advice, and I also seek legal advice for our listeners out there, because, you know, there might be a way for you to do something similar if you find yourself in a similar situation like this. So certainly seek that advice. We're going to be right back with our guest, Sydney Potter, author of The Flip, right after this quick message.
My baloney has a first name. It's O-S-C-A-R. My baloney has a second name. It's M-A-Y-E-R. Oh, I love to eat it every day. If you ask me my face, 'cause Oscar Mayer has a way with C-O-L-O-D-N-A.
Oscar Mayer, the first name in Bologna.
How's that?
Well, welcome back to the Property Beat and our talk with Sydney Potter, otherwise known as a flipologist and author of the authoritative field guide on real estate flipping, The Flip. We'd like to remind our listeners that if you have a question you'd like to ask our guests, you can simply call us at 347-989-0439. So, Sydney, what prompted you to write this book called The Flip about your experience?
Because there is something very unique in terms of, Jonathan, in particular about new tract housing. Took more of I guess you could say, kind of a quasi-academic perspective on it. I actually went into a bookstore. This is actually, I had a second home out there in Phoenix, right there on the 10th hole on a Del Webb golf course. This is like about 2004, I think. I was about 3 years into it. And I said, are there real estate books there on new track? Because, you know, you want to consume as much as you can. The more knowledge, the better. There is just nada. There was a couple chapters or a half a chapter in a real estate type of book. Maybe it takes two or three different shelves of real estate related books. A lot of it on REO flipping, tax deferred right. exchanges, et cetera, what to know as a real estate broker, but not on new track housing. I said, gee whiz, this might be a niche here. So that's what prompted it. Probably wrote about three quarters of the book in about 2005. Put the book down because just too busy to finish it, quite frankly. And then it was more of a real estate 101 on house flipping. In fact, I think that was even the title. And I was pleasantly surprised when I finished in about 2008, almost 2009. That was, the final edit actually was in 2010. You'd be surprised how long these things take, Jonathan, in terms of
right.
putting together a product. I mean, really crossing your T's, dotting your I's. Just a very long time, actually. And that's, of course, unfortunately, where the last two or three chapters were completed. It took a different tone because you're talking about someone who went into a project fairly upbeat, okay, and finished a product fairly downbeat, on a downbeat. But it was right. I hate to sound like Oprah type of situation, but it's very cathartic, okay? Just really good to flush that type of knowledge outside of your brain, but in a good way, because you knew it could kind of help. So in that way, you're being almost philanthropic to the industry. Well, to the industry, and I mean that in a very modest way. So that was more or less, I would say, the start and finish of the book.
Well, it is a field guide, and it reads like a novel, and it was kind of your therapy as well, having gone through this experience. I'm certainly that's probably what you found out to be the case.
Mm-hmm.
So out of all of this learning experience, what are the top lessons that you've taken from this?
If you were to say what's the one, I can answer that in one word. That's hubris.
Okay.
Okay. And either the lack thereof or in excess of. Talk about God. Was it Alan Greenspan who said, help me out on this, Jonathan, irrational exuberance, okay? Exuberance,
yeah, exactly.
And hubris. The word exuberance and hubris actually have an etymological link to each other. And hubris is, what did I have, a home on the 10th hole out there in beautiful Arizona on a Del Webb golf course? That was certainly an expense that need not happen. Now, with that, okay, in terms of having too much hubris, in terms of lessons learned, it's best if one goes through a crash and burn situation, either it be the tech boom 10 years ago or the real estate boom now, or a crash and burn in terms of a relationship or present day real estate or whatever. Okay, it's to learn from it, and it's been an incredible learning experience for me. And it's nice to put it on paper because it's very unlikely that you'd probably make those mistakes again. Actually.
Right, and that's the hope, is that you don't go back around that mountain again, and you don't see it, when it does present itself in the future, that you're able to use those learning experiences and go a different route. So that's great. What are the top three tips that you would give our listeners when if they're considering launching out into this flipping arena?
Well, I had mentioned just a moment ago that before you buy, you want to read. The more the better. Listen, just not the flip written by this guy named D. Sidney Potter. There's good stuff out there. Stay away from the bad stuff. And I don't want to get name specific, but you know in your heart of hearts of what's the bad stuff in terms of certain testimonials or certain rather, what do you call it, infomercials, which I take a really hard shot at in the flip
mm-hmm.
because I think it really dilutes the credibility and the qualitative aspects of the real estate industry. So with that, read, which means research. And you don't have to be an economist. All that stuff is in your laptop, at your armchair. I don't think I sound – well, 10 years ago, in terms of research, Google MapQuest satellite shops, that was actually – used to be a paid – service, you used to, and I paid to be a member, I think about $19 a month or $100 a year. So you can take satellite shots and view prospective opportunities nationwide in a matter of seconds. So once again, research your areas. Make sure you've gotten your FICO score. intact. Think of yourself as a business because you, in fact, are. You know, have a clean balance sheet. Make sure that, that if your credit profile, your monetary profile is has to absolutely be in shape. You don't want to get the court, or rather the cart before the horse. And often mm-hmm. folks do. and really the third related item, and this is almost, well, it's a brother of the second item in terms of credit profile, and that is make sure you've got reserves. Now, that's sometimes a scary word, and that's the wonderful thing about, well, in fact, I know this for a fact, but even if you're through a major corporate reorganization, a bankruptcy, in order to have that discharged, either the directors or officers have to take, and I don't know if Mr. Trump took this himself or Sam Zell, but there's a certain a CE, Canadian Education, courses that have to be taken to the folks on the ground that file Chapter 7. And that is educate yourself about finances, and it comes to reserves. Don't be scared of reserves. It may only require about $10,000 worth of pony money in your bank account per annum, meaning that if you've got a mortgage payment, for example, $600 a month, the lender's going to require that you have 6 months' worth of reserves. That's $3,600. If you've only got $2,400, I'd say you're about $1,200 short. That's fifth grade math.
Yeah.
That means, listen, you've, of the three tenants right here that I would certainly recommend and other professionals, if two out of three is not good enough, okay? Make sure you've got those first three covered, and then think about roaming the earth, roaming the world from your laptop or in person, and think about buying real estate.
Absolutely. Well, we've got a question from a listener, Karen Jeffries, Des Moines, Iowa. She emailed us, and she's asking, see, how are you finding the opportunities in the market? My local market has been pretty consistent, so opportunities are not as readily available. How would I go about finding opportunities in one of the harder hit markets? Any advice?
Sure do. Let me bifurcate Karen's answer, because I'm not certain, and I can answer it very quickly. Not certain if she's talking about flipping or cash flow. So I would have two different responses. The great thing about this country, a North Tectonic Plate, is there's 3 million people, 300 million folks. There's 400 to 500 different markets, submarkets out there. You'd go, I mean, let's get specific right here. If you want to research it, Karen, go to builderonline.com. Go to forecastchart.com. Go to Neighborhood Scout, like a Boy Scout.com. Those will give you and break down literally hundreds, if not dozens, of markets will show you. And don't let this, I mean, this is the nerdy thing about real estate. It's so wonderful, besides getting your hands dirty. It will show you the up markets and the down market. You'll be able to quantify whether or not it's a cash flow market. Or it's a high appreciation market. We have both of those markets. The Northeast, in particular, Washington, D.C., are great appreciation markets. Wilmington, Delaware, New Hampshire. If you want to go to cash flow markets, and you'll be able to see this through some of the websites I talk about, I get RIS feeds on those, so I'm fairly up to date on it, and so are normal folks that even don't buy. Those would be markets like Phoenix, Vegas, Riverside, where let's say you've got a mortgage payment of $700, but you can net $1,200 in rent. That's $500 a month. You get 10 of those, that's $5,000 a month, $60,000 a year. Even if you scale it down to only five properties, on these very small properties, that's a cash flow market, and that's more of a long term. So do your research, Karen. Des Moines, Iowa, the Midwest, the flyover states, and I mean that's actually in a good way, because that means some of this real estate bust kind of flew over and it was somewhat insulated,
right.
Which is absolutely wonderful. I don't think Des Moines, Iowa area are in around that area may not be such a bad idea, but you'll get to know that once you research these markets a little bit better.
Excellent, excellent response for Karen. We're going to take a break real quick with Sydney Potter right after this quick commercial break. If I can find the right button.
Hello, boys and girls. It's me, the Frito Bandito. You know what I heard about you? I heard you want to be a Frito Bandito like me. You do? Then you must sing the Bandito song. Let's sing together. You just follow the bouncing Fritos corn chips bag. I'm ay, ay, ay. I am the Frito Bandito, hey! I like Fritos corn chips, I love them, I do. I want Fritos corn chips, I'll get them from you. Ay, 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 ay. Oh, I am the Frito Bandito. Give me Fritos corn chips and I'll be your friend. The Frito Bandito, you must not offend. Now, boys and girls, you are Frito Bandidos, too. You sing the Frito Bandito song, and you loco for crunchy Fritos corn chips.
That's nice.
Munch, munch, munch a bunch of Fritos corn chips. Munch, munch a bunch of Fritos corn chips.
All right, well, welcome back to the Property Beat and our discussion with D. Sidney Potter, real estate investor and author of The Flip. We'd like to remind our listeners that if you have a question you'd like to ask our guests, you can simply call us at 347-989-0439. So, Sidney, how can we make sure some of these people that are looking to get into some of these markets don't make the same mistakes or go down the same path as you have found yourself in 2007? You mentioned a lot of great strategies there.
Sure, sure. Yeah, there's, you know, I mean, to make it a little – make sure you confer with counsel, and I don't mean that in a legal counsel type way, although sometimes you have to. I hate to, but I mean counsel of others. Those would be uncles, maybe your father, work colleagues, even folks that you're not going to even maybe speak to directly, but that when I say seek the counsel of others, and that means going to informative websites, maybe seminars. You know, I'm kind of on the fence with seminar type situations, whether or not they really convey enough information. They're simply marketing tools. It just depends. It's all content driven. So if there's lots of qualitative content that you're being given, certainly take that up. In a way, it was almost, you know, when you make these type of mistakes. And listen, I'm a happy guy out there. I've got 10 to 12 hours, and I'm working deals now. You know, you almost feel like it's in Julius's court between Bruto, Heraclitus, and some of the other senators. You're sometimes just not cognitively. You're sometimes not cognitively aware of what's going on in terms of the dubious, cutthroat environment, and don't take some of the cues that some people hastily give you. That happened a little bit, and God bless my father, and he's a sociology professor now, spent 30 years in the industry, still maintains his real estate license that he got, I think, in 66 or 68 in California. But he would ask me, Doug, and he said, listen, have you put together a spreadsheet, some type of formula with macros that quantifies in terms of reserve requirements? I see you're incredibly busy there, son, but maybe you should slow it down. And that's probably some advice that I probably should have heeded. Now, when you're in the midst of this just incredible, I mean, there's been nothing like this since the Great Depression in terms of economic catastrophe and upward projectile. And so when you're right in the middle of the storm, and we talk about the Midwest, you're sometimes not aware of the potential consequences. And that's what happens. So surround yourself by some good folks, either online or in flesh and blood, and bounce those decision-making processes off of, actually.
Excellent advice. If our listeners want to know more about what you're doing or get a copy of your book, what's the best way for them to get in touch with you?
Sure. Go to theflip.tv, just like television, although I think the TV is for some island out there, the Tanzanian between North Mariana Islands and Guam, but .tv. So it would be theflip.tv, and you'll get everything you need to know about the book.
That's excellent. Well, you have been a great guest. I really appreciate it.
Well, you know,
we've got a little bit of time here left, and any parting thoughts?
Well, you know, it's actually a comment. I didn't know that there was actually a commonality of 6 degrees of separation, but I think you know, Jonathan, John D. Mayfield. He was a former
president. Yeah,
well, he wrote a great testimonial about the flip, and I know he's out there in Missouri. Talk about a market underwater, unfortunately. You know, they got a little bit of flooding out there. But he wrote a wonderful testimony about the flip. And once again, we're going to the Midwest, have those Midwest values. That's the total Norman Rockwell Main Street appetite that advocates prudence. And that will show you the road, actually.
Well, he's a great guy. I appreciate you being with us today. It looks like we're out of time, certainly up against the wall here. Thank you so much for joining us and sharing your experience with our listeners. Stay in touch with us, and until next time, all right?
God bless. Adios.
All right. God bless.
Well, that's a wrap for our show today, folks. We hope you've enjoyed this episode of The Property Beat. We'd like to remind you that if you have any questions you'd like answered on our next show, you can simply email us at questions@thepropertybeat.com. You can also follow our blog at thepropertybeat.com, where you'll get news, tips, and stories about today's real estate industry. For now, I'm your host, Cliff Perotti, along with Jonathan Nicholas, saying so long. Thanks for tuning in.
Sorry about that. He cut us off there. Are you still there?